Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Today our topic is the wonderful country of Libya. And I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. How are you doing, Jerry?
Fantastic. How are you doing, Chris?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited about this show. Yeah, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes, I'd love to.
Yeah.
We're thrilled and excited about having Hugh Fraser back with us as a return visit.
Yeah.
He's with Cox and Kings, and he was our guest for India. A phenomenal show on India. And
welcome back,
Hugh. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Jerry. And hello to you, Chris. It's very nice to be invited back to Travel Advice and to have the opportunity to discuss Libya, which is a fascinating country.
That's
and
true.
One that really is surprisingly, you know, relatively little known.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you, Hugh, for coming back on the show. We had a great show with India, and I'm really looking forward to this show. Yeah.
Hugh, I only spent a long time ago, maybe 25 years ago, I was in Algeria, and I was on a camel caravan that headed east, and they told us we were actually legally in Libya for about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
There are no roads, no customs, no anything, so technically I know about Libya, but I've only been there for about 4 days in the middle of the desert nowhere, and in the sort of the central west part. But would you like to tell us, first of all, for those going, who can go and who can't go?
Right.
Or who may not be able to go because of visa issue?
The visa situation is one that any traveler considering visiting the country needs to study carefully, as the rules and regulations often are changing constantly. At the moment, visas are not being issued to U.S. passport holders. The majority of European passport holders or Western European passport holders and passport holders of lots of other nations are being issued visas. So the situation is very much in flux, so Americans don't get disheartened. It could well change, but I wouldn't say would be a destination for U.S. passport holders to be looking at within the next 6 months.
Okay.
Mm. And when is the best time to go?
Well, it really depends what part of the country you're talking about. Libya is a large country, without stating the obvious, but climatically it can probably be divided up into two main zones. The coastal littoral, which has a climate very similar to Sicily or southern Italy. And so therefore you have a winter and a defined spring and autumn. And I would say the spring and the autumn are the best times to see the sites along the coastal littoral. However, from the tourist point of view, an equal attraction, especially from the adventure tourism point of view, is the south of the country, an area known as the Fezzan. And the Fezzan is part of the Sahara Desert, and it has some of the most extraordinary desert scenery I think I've ever seen in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The best time to go to the Fezzan is during the winter months, from, say, November through to February. Whereas the north on the coast, you would be looking at April and May are very pleasant, and then September and October are probably the peak months to consider.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can imagine, being located along the Mediterranean, the climate is fairly clement most of the year.
Well, let me ask, as you, I'm assuming that the roads and the infrastructure along the Mediterranean, like from Benghazi to Tripoli, et cetera, is very good, but as you go interior of the country, is it easy to travel?
If you have the right permits, travel through Libya, should really be organized through a travel agency, because it is only very new to tourism. There are lots of roadblocks and people checking paperwork the whole way. So I would qualify my statement by saying, provided your paperwork is in order, travel throughout northern Libya is relatively easy. The roads are good. However, going down, the country is so large, but to drive, for example, from one of the principal centers of tourism in southern Libya to Tripoli would take 11 hours. So likewise, from Tripoli in the north, travel from Tripoli in the northwest to Benghazi in the northeast would be another substantial journey of about 12 hours. So there are some sectors that you should definitely consider flying.
That the roads are decent enough, if you don't mind taking the time.
The roads in the north of the they're very good roads where they exist. Yeah, Libya has a good oil economy.
Okay, so it's a pretty rich country. Well, let me ask you another real quick question before we get specific. For a first-time visitor that wanted a good overview of Libya, how long do you recommend they stay?
You would need to ask what the interest of the traveler was. If it is archaeology, a first timer might like to consider a trip of between, in 1 week you could comfortably see the primary Roman attractions in the northwestern province of Tripolitana. If you wanted to have an overview of both the Roman archaeology in Tripolitana and the Greek archaeology over in Cyrenaica, you would need, 10 days. But wouldn't be a very in-depth trip. However, that's the archaeology. The other type of tourism that Libya has to offer is the incredible wilderness of the desert. As I mentioned earlier, some of the most beautiful desert scenery that I've ever seen. Now, to get to the desert region, it does involve some traveling. So for the adventure traveler, I would say a minimum of 10 days.
But so if they're going to get the whole country, a mixture of everything, they need at least 2.5 weeks. Is that about right?
Two and a half weeks, you could have a very good overview of the entire country.
Okay. So let's talk. Why don't you just start talking about Libya? Because you've been so many places there and so many times.
Sure.
And just start talking about the highlights and the different areas that people really should consider visiting and how long they might stay in each of those areas or... and also, if you want to cover at some cost, I mean, is it really expensive to go there, or is it moderate, or is it cheap?
Well, if we talk about the country from the point of view of tourism, it can be divided, I think, comfortably into three different areas. The first area is the province known as Tripolitana, which is named after the capital city, Tripoli. And within Tripolitana are to be found three major sites. Two of them are up there amongst the greatest Roman archaeological treasures that are in the world, the cities of Leptis Magna and Sabratha. And the third treasure is the UNESCO World Heritage listed city of Ghadames, which it was one of the old caravan cities that governed trade between the Sahara and the Mediterranean coast. It's been listed by UNESCO because it is a very beautiful town with lots of whitewashed architecture, lots of hidden alleyways, and it's truly stunning. So that's Tripolitana. To the northwest northeast of Libya is a separate area called Cyrenaica, and it is joined on the map between. The two provinces are joined. Because the area in between is so arid, in ancient times it was in effect a separate island. And this area was settled about 800 BC by Greeks from places like Santorini, which had recently exploded. And it has two major Greek cities, one called Cyrene and the other one called Apollonia. The area, though, is literally littered with ancient monuments and is very green. There's a very attractive mountain range there called the Green Mountains. Little to the further towards the Egyptian border is a site that many listeners who are interested in World War II history will be familiar with, which is the city of Tobruk. And whilst there is not a huge amount to see at Tobruk, there are nevertheless... if you want to go and just visit a place that was so famous in the history of World War II with the sieges going on, there are some monuments there that and cemeteries, of course, that can be viewed. So that's the north of the country. It's primarily archaeological in its attractions. Then there's the south of the country, the Fezzan. And the Fezzan as far as the both the peoples of the region and the look of the land is almost totally different. The people, or a large part of the population of Fezzan, are the Tuareg people, also known as the Blue Men of the Desert. The attractions here are incredible. If you can imagine dunes that go up 200 feet high, when you drive through this area and you're breaking tracks across the sand, it's almost as if no one else has been there. There are rocks that have been eroded, rocks maybe 80 feet high that have been, or even higher, that have been eroded into fantastic shapes that take on all different hues at different times of the day, sunset and sunrise. So there are the attractions of the great sand seas known as the Ergs, also the rocks, and further, there is human interest in the region too, as in prehistoric times, the whole of North Africa had a very different climate. Indeed, hippos, giraffe, elephant, and various other animals used to roam freely across this region. And there are quite a few areas in the Fezzan region where very well-preserved petroglyphs can be found, depicting the ancient or the original inhabitants of the region hunting these animals. And when you look at the obviously what was almost semi-tropical region in prehistoric times, and then as depicted in the petroglyphs, and then look around you and see a landscape where not even a blade of grass now grows, it really is quite sobering. Mm. But perhaps I think the most attractive thing astounding thing I saw in the Fezzan is a series of 32 lakes called the Lakes of Ubari. And to reach these, you drive for about 40 minutes from a town called Jerma across a series of sand dunes where absolutely nothing grows at all. And then suddenly you crest the dune and look down, and there are a series of ribbon lakes surrounded by palm trees, and it's one of the most beautiful sights that I've seen anywhere in the world. Mm. So that, I think, in summary, are the three regions of Libya, the Tripolitana with the Roman archaeology, and the Saharan town of Ghadames. Also, there are some things I didn't mention there. The area has a significant, they're called in Libya the Mountain Arabs, elsewhere you might call them Berber people.
Oh, right.
They have built in the mountains between Tripoli and Ghadames a series of very interesting villages. It's the region called the Jebel Nafusa, and I just think it adds a further layer of interest to Libya. So there's that Tripolitana. In the northeast, the separate province of Cyrene or Cyrenaica, with its Greek and World War II, or Greek ancient Greek interest and World War II interest, and then the Fezzan of southern Libya, with its absolutely astoundingly beautiful desert landscapes.
Wonderful!
Phenomenal.
That's a great summary, Hugh. Very, yeah. That was I you painted that in my mind there. Yeah, of that area. That's great.
I wanted to ask about accommodations, about the transportation. I mean, do they have modern buses, old buses, as you route to
accommodation,
around the hotel?
Accommodation,
transportation.
Accommodation, transportation, and logistics in Libya do vary a lot. Tripoli has an excellent deluxe hotel called the Corinthia Bab Africa. However, outside Tripoli, we're going to have to accept a significant drop in standards of accommodation. Benghazi, second city of Libya, has a 4-star hotel, but outside those places, you'd be looking at 3 or 2-star accommodation. And down in the south, 1-star or tented camp. Indeed, some operators do offer overland safaris where you pitch your own tent, because literally to get between A and B, there are no hotels. That's the accommodation. If you were liking your creature comforts, the south of the country is definitely a no-no, but you can travel to a reasonable degree of comfort in the north of the country. One, so transportation is by either Libyan Arab Airlines. Libyan Arab Airlines did have a bad rap, and because of sanctions that were previously imposed on Libya, they had lacked spare parts. But I understand, well, of late, they have remedied that, and their aircraft are being properly serviced. So you can say it is possible now to fly, or it is safe to fly between Tripoli and Benghazi, which therefore a one-hour flight eliminates the 12-hour-plus journey. The roads, as I said before, are good, and Libya has very good, well, as far as tourists are concerned, nice SUVs of modern Japanese manufacture, which makes getting around easy. One thing I do need to point out, though, which can significantly affect someone wishing to travel to the country, is that Libya is a dry country, so there's absolutely no alcohol at all.
To be found
within Libya, nor can you import it into the country.
In fact,
if you are caught trying to smuggle it in, you get instantly deported. Those who like to have a glass of red wine after their meal are going to have to put off that nice habit, or going to become healthy for the time they're in Libya.
Well, I was going to ask, now that we're on the drink and thing, about the food. Is it typically North African Arab type food, Mediterranean food? Is it safe to eat? And is it well cooked? Is it a varied type of menu? What about
right.
the food?
The food in Libya was historically, Libya was a part of the Ottoman Empire, in more recent times. And then it was for a brief while an Italian colony. And the Italian legacy has left, or Italy's occupation has left the legacy as far as the food is concerned, which is, as you would expect, being next door to Tunisia, there is a lot of couscous and more sort of Moroccan, Tunisian, Algerian-style food.
Yes.
So with your hummuses and your pita breads, couscous, harissa is a popular spice that is used to give flavor to the food. Grilled meats are popular, but at the same time, dishes such as spaghetti and various pastas, salads, etc., have also found their way into the Libyan diet.
No.
So I would say a mixture between what we know more familiar with as Moroccan-style food, with a bit of Italian influence there as well.
Nice.
There are some excellent small little restaurants to be found in Libya, but the dining isn't that outside that one hotel I mentioned, the Corinthia Bab Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The dining isn't sophisticated.
Oh,
it's more your fantastic little local eatery that where you can find the chef cooking up an absolutely delicious dishes.
I bet your coffee is probably pretty common. A lot of coffee shops and things like that.
Lots of coffee shops and tea shops.
Where people
go along and smoke the hubbly bubbly or the nargila.
Right.
It is difficult to outside the coffee shops to really find places to interact with the Libyan population. A coffee shop is one way to do it, but there aren't. Another interesting thing, I believe there are no cinemas in Libya.
Oh, really?
And entertainment in the evenings is pretty restricted.
Oh, okay.
No discotheques.
Hmm.
No.
So they don't have any nightclubs, and they don't have any discos
not.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
Libya has its own brand of socialism, and it is run according to the principles of Colonel Gaddafi, is set forth in a book called The Green Book, which everyone may be more familiar with Mao's Red Book. Colonel Gaddafi has grown his own political thoughts, which he has, and this is how he tries to govern the country. In some ways, those are very progressive. For example, he does promote women in parliament and women in education, etc. But to westernize some of the aspects of the political philosophy are more totalitarian.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, great God. What about the cost of things?
Yeah.
Yeah, the cost.
What about the cost of food, things such as food and hotels and
Libya is surprisingly expensive. It is a very wealthy country as a result of its oil manufacture, and as a result, Libyan people are paid above average in the region. Libya attracts a lot of migrant workers from Egypt, from Chad and Sudan and places like that, and costs as a result are high. That's also relatively high. It's especially the case because in the best hotels available, you will often find lots of businessmen trying to do business with Libya, and therefore they're not reliant on the tourist dollar and can charge like other big cities in the world, going rates for business, which, to quote you prices, you would be for a one-week vacation in Libya based on two-sharing, you would be looking at around about $5,000 a person, not including international air. If you travel as a group, there are certain savings to be had. Our office in London, Cox & King's office in London, operates a number of group tours, including air from London. And those you would be looking at around about $4,000 per head for maybe a week to 10 days, depending on where you go. Travel down to the Fasan, because of the logistics involved and everything having to be imported, even though the standard of accommodation drops significantly when you go down there, costs actually escalate. So Libya, in short, is not a cheap place to travel to, but I do think it's one of the most rewarding places that I've ever been in terms of archaeology.
Well, it sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like it's a combination of a whole lot of places up there, all the way from Greece and Italy and North Africa.
Roman culture.
Totally Mediterranean.
Yeah.
One civilization that I didn't touch upon, but also had an influence certainly on this region, was the Carthaginians. The Carthaginians actually founded places such as the principal, what I call Roman site of Leptis Magna, and also Sabratha. And they initiated founded those cities, and then later on, when Rome conquered Carthage, they then fell under Roman sway. In fact, one of Rome's best or better known emperors was actually born in the city of Leptis Magna. His name was Septimus Severus, and was the first African emperor that Rome had. He was also one of the strongest emperors they had. So yes, there is a lot of history that is associated with Libya. You may ask, why did these incredibly rich cities grow up on the Libyan coast in what is now relatively it's not the richest land in terms of agriculture? And the reason was, in ancient times, it was much more fertile. But also, Rome, in its heyday, had an insatiable desire for wild animals and beasts. And these were imported from the African interior. So there were lots of the Colosseum in Rome was actually supplied with lions and giraffes and various other things from places such as Cyrene, Leptis Magna, and Sabratha. And the traders of these regions made a fortune from importing the wild animals, selling their grain to Rome, because Rome had a huge dole out of grain to the people, and importing lots of other products of North Africa to Rome. This region in ancient times was known as the breadbasket of the world. So the people made huge profits and were able, therefore, to glorify their cities and build some of the finest, the most elaborate series of Roman baths, mansions, and public buildings anywhere. So that's what now makes visiting these cities so impressive, because you're seeing the New Yorks and Londons and Parises of the ancient world, the richest cities of ancient Rome in Libya. And I think another thing that makes it so interesting is because Libya, because of its recent, it was a a pariah nation as far as the Western world was concerned. And people have not been able to visit Libya since the, well, it's been very difficult to visit Libya for many years. Libya had a king until, I think, 1950, King Idris. He was overthrown by the socialist revolution led by Colonel Gaddafi. And since then, relations between the West and Libya have been very strained. So really between, say, 1997 and 1952, there was just a very tiny trickle of people who were able to see these incredible sights. Mm-hmm. And I think that partially has fueled the immense amount of interest that has suddenly been created on the one hand, but also accounts from the fact that this country is really almost an unknown as a tourist destination.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, it looks like we're all out of time here. The time flew by.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for inviting me to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's our pleasure, and we're going to have you back again.
Definitely.
Soon. And
yeah.
We appreciate it very much. The information is totally valuable to our listeners all over the world.
Oh, yeah, that was really good.
Well, Jerry and Chris, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be
it's our pleasure.
Your guest again.